ladies and gentlemen. This is Paul Nichols, the Investor Coach. It must be Saturday morning, 9 a.m. Eastern, because we're on the radio. I'm joined by Deb Seward, my occasional cohort. How are you this morning, Deb?
I'm great. How are you doing today, Paul?
Great. Deb's been, she's been floating this year. Deb's been a floater this year. She's been having a lot of fun this year, haven't you, Deb?
Absolutely. Just done a lot of studying and vacationing and trying to learn some non-traditional ways here to do some investments.
Excellent. Well, hey, it is Independence Weekend. We did pre-record this a couple days ago. Happy birthday, America. Ain't it great to be American? Ain't it great in the country? You know, I had a friend of mine a while back said that we've already won the lottery just by being born in this country.
I agree with that.
And, you know, it wasn't until I did a lot of international travel. I used to travel a lot for business. I ever tell you a story about why I quit doing that, Deb?
No, not really.
I woke up one time in Cali, Colombia, in a hotel in the middle of the night. Something shook me awake. I thought a bomb or something went off. I didn't know what it, but whatever it was. I woke up and didn't know where I was. I had to call the lobby and ask them where I was.
Are you serious?
I'm serious. It's a heart attack.
You traveled that much?
I was traveling so much that Central America, South America, Asia, a little bit of Europe, but mostly Central America, South America, and Asia, that it scared me.
It's an unsettling feeling,
isn't it? It is. So I did my business, went home, and that was it. I was done.
That was done.
Gave it up. Yep. Let it go at that point. Had the business in these different countries. In fact, still have business in some of those countries.
That. That's wonderful.
Yeah. But anyway, that's not what we're here to talk about, my escapades, but more about your future escapades, I guess, as it relates
to good way to say that.
Money and finance. And this show is designed to pull back the curtain on the financial services industry and expose the truth about money and investing. We at Financial Abundance, which is my firm that sponsors and this show, we believe that, in fact, our motto is... Is that our motto, Deb? Is that what that's called?
I would say it's a motto.
Is education leads to clarity. Clarity leads to confidence. And confidence, hopefully, can lead to peace of mind. And yes, it is attainable in this area. A lot of the stuff that we hear about and read about is just marketing minutia. Did I say minutia? Is that something you can say on TV, minutia? What is minutia, anyway?
I don't know if there's a definition for it.
Is there a word? Is that a word, minutia?
I'd have to Google that one.
I think that's a word, minutia. I've picked that
it
up
sounds
somewhere.
Sounds good.
Sounds like a good word. Okay, I guess it's better than saying manure.
Yeah, sure is.
Minutia, manure. I think they're kind of the similar the thing. But anyway, I'm here to pull back the curtain, as I usually do, going on 3 years now on our syndicated radio show, It's Your Money. For those of you that may have never heard this show, welcome to the show. We are also on iTunes. And iTunes, we're smoking on iTunes, Deb. Did I tell you about what happened on iTunes?
Well, I think you said you had someone from Australia.
We got people all over the world, but we had 6,000 downloads in the last 12 months.
Oh, that's awesome.
For a central PA show and somebody who's never been in media to have a syndicated show, small syndication, but that kind of downloads just warms my heart. It makes me realize that what we're doing is not in vain, Deb. You know, we do this as a public service.
Yes.
We don't get paid to do this, do we?
No, we don't.
So, you know, I feel good about that.
Well, and plus I think people are really eager to learn. They're looking for people to educate and to guide them.
Are you saying that people are coming to the point in this day and age where they're not just going to trust their advisor anymore, but they really would like to know what the hell's going on?
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think that's true, too. And I would say that a lot of the books that are being written and a lot of the conversation out there is not just about the hype anymore. It's starting to get into the nitty-gritty of how the fees and all this stuff really does affect investors.
Exactly.
We've been saying it for years, ladies and gentlemen. Some of you have been scoffing at me, a small group out there. And you know what? You know what I learned a long time ago, Deb? I'm 46. I just turned 46 years old.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. When I was 30 years old, I had a guy, one of my mentors, said something to me that stuck in my mind. I'll never forget it. I live by it. And that is, people of integrity expect to be believed. And when they're not, they let time prove them right.
That makes a lot of sense.
Is that solid or what?
Makes a lot
of sense.
Well, I'll
tell you, I live my life by that, and I know, hey, the proof's in the pudding. What comes around goes around.
I agree with that as well.
I think most people do agree with that, okay? Let's talk about the market update in our first segment here. It's Your Money is obviously a financial show, and we believe that we should do the market update every so often, so Deb's going to help me do that this week. Now, this is as of close of business 6/29, and it has been a rocky couple months.
Rocky.
But this too shall pass. Don't listen to all the hype and the BS that you hear on TV and the media. It just boggles my mind. The press, the negative headlines you're seeing today are no different than the negative headlines in the 90s, 80s, 70s, 60s, 50s, 40s, and, 30s, whatever. It's just a different subject, different thing, different bubble, if you will. Okay.
A hiccup. I used to call those hiccups. Yeah, there's a little hiccup right now in the market.
There's a hiccup. Better than a belch, I guess, right?
Absolutely.
Anyway, market update. We believe that the market's efficient and a well-diversified, prudent investor should own the entire marketplace, not just part of it. This is what all the science has said in the last 50 years, from Nobel laureates to professors from Ivy League colleges around the world. Country would be Ivy League for us, but universities from around the world. And all the studies, Deb, would you agree with this? All the studies that we've read, all the big brains that the vast majority of the financial industry does subscribe to would all agree that the market's efficient, modern portfolio theory works, and science can be applied to prudent investing. Would that be an accurate statement?
Very accurate.
Okay. But that's not what the industry propagates, is it?
No. Kind of the opposite. They want you to trust them. They want to look at past performances to pick certain stocks or funds that will do well in the future, and they're not using the science. They learn it, but they don't really use the application of it.
They're required to learn it in school, aren't they?
Absolutely.
And they're even tested on it.
Yes.
It's interesting that how few outfits really apply it. We believe the market's efficient. We're not going to chase the market like the industry's doing now, chasing small. Last year they chased international. The year before that they chased large. We're not going to chase the market. We're going to own the entire marketplace, rebalance it according to the science, using filters, not what Paul thinks or Deb thinks or Jim Cramer thinks or Susie Orman thinks or Dave Ramsey thinks or whoever you're... Phil, the stock expert thinks, or whoever that is.
Whoever on Fox News.
Yeah, we believe the market's efficient, whereby we're going to own it all. In a well-diversified portfolio, there are going to be mundane earnings from time to time. There's going to be asset class. If your whole portfolio's up, when's the whole market up? It never happens.
That's correct.
We've seen the whole market go down
right. Because
of political involvement, like in 2008 and the credit thing. But we've never seen the whole market up. So my point to that is a well-diversified portfolio is going to have hot asset classes that are up and those that are down.
Right.
If it's not well diversified, it's going to follow the market, wouldn't it?
That's exactly
what they see on the news, the S&P, the Dow.
And what happens, I believe, is if too many people listen to this media hype, it's usually when the investors that end up losing, because they'll pull out when the market's down, and you know.
If you don't know, you're always going to be swayed by the news that triggers emotion.
Right, and it's like panic.
You know that you know, or you don't know. It's that simple.
Yep.
You know, if you know that you know what's going on is the right thing to do, then you're not going to be swayed.
Right.
You know, that's why I just did a TV spot this morning for Channel 6 talking about guys just mellow out.
Yep, don't panic.
Need to calm down. Quit listening to all this media minutia that's getting people all worked up, freaked out, and scared. And you know the people that are getting freaked out, worked up, and scared are those of you that really don't understand this stuff, which, by the way, is the vast majority of people. I just had a CEO of a corporation. I've been working with him a couple months now. But he said to me, "No, it's amazing, Paul. I run this large company, and I don't know bupkis about finance. But I know my thing."
Right. You wouldn't be able to do his job either. Right?
I had a CFO recently sit down with me a few weeks ago and said, "I may be a CFO, but I don't understand
investments.
I mean, I understand balance sheets and stuff, sure. But I don't understand investments." So what's the number one thing we hear, Deb, we just talked about it. The number one thing we hear from people is their apologies.
For not knowing.
And why would we expect you to know?
Yeah.
That's why you go to a professional. You know, if you knew everything about dentistry, you wouldn't go to a dentist, would
That's
you?
Exactly right.
You know?
And if I was an attorney, then I wouldn't
then
go
you'd,
to...
Then,
right.
then you'd get another profession. No,
right.
I'm just joking. Little attorney joke there, little pun on the attorney. Sorry, you know.
No, but the bottom line is you need to go to an expert in that field.
Yeah, that's why we have professionals. And many of you are professionals, and you're elected vocations.
And you shouldn't feel bad that you don't know someone else's vocation.
Yeah, and I don't feel bad I don't know yours, ladies and gentlemen, whatever your thing is. You know, some of you are service providers for me because I don't know everything about everything.
Exactly.
I know you would like to think I do, ladies and gentlemen. I appreciate the vote of confidence, but it's not true. Anyway, let's move on. Market update. Russell 2500. Deb, what is the Russell 2500?
Well, it measures the performance of the small to the mid-cap segment of the U.S. equity universe.
How are we doing this year,
well,
to date?
Year to date, we're down 0.75.
Ooh, about a percent, just
yeah.
about. Doggone it, man. 2 months ago, that was up 6%.
That was up.
Ow,
so
that
we've
hurts.
Lost some ground there.
Yes, this will pass May and June. So we're negative and small to mid growth. How about Russell 2000 index, which measures the performance of small to very small growth
right.
companies?
We're down also almost 1%, 0.91. Again, we were up a little further than this. It was, I think, March, April, and now here it is, May and June.
You know what this just made me think of, Deb? It goes to show the power of rebalancing, because back in April when we rebalanced, it was all up.
And we bought whatever was
And
left.
We locked in our gains. It's a
there
beautiful thing. So Russell 2000 value measures the performance of small cap value companies. Values are not growth. Growth and value are different types of companies. How's the Russell 2000 value, small value companies doing?
Well, year to date, they're down about 0.5%, 0.47.
Ouch, it's down too. Doggone it. How about the Russell 1000, which measures large value?
This is the biggest downturn for the U.S. equity market right now.
Well, large growth is.
Large growth
yeah.
And large value are both down. Year to date for this value, large cap value, is negative 4.14%.
And then large growth?
Large growth, which would be measured by the S&P 500, that is down 5.71%.
So, ladies and gentlemen, May and June have really put a dent in our gains for the first part of this year in the total domestic equity marketplace as of the end of yesterday's business. That would be Wednesday. I'm sorry, Wednesday, June 29th. We're negative everywhere.
Yeah, but, you know, here's a good compelling case. If you had small and mid-cap and very small companies, you would not be down if you owned as much as you would if you owned large-cap growth and large-cap value. And as you and I have experienced, a lot of portfolios that we review are mainly large-cap.
Yeah.
So if you were not part of those markets, you'd be down probably.
If you're not working with an academic investor coach or someone who really believes in true diversity, not marketing hype diversity, but true diversity, then you're doing okay, ladies and gentlemen, even though things are negative. If you're with an advisor or a rep, which would be a different animal, registered representative, that's chasing the market and encouraging you to buy this because it's going up or whatever, you don't need to walk away from those people. You need to run, not return any calls. You just need to get away from them because your best interests aren't in their minds.
That's
it's
right.
Their profitability to have you chase the market.
Yeah, you may want to get a second opinion on that.
May want to. Internationally, just to say this, I don't want to get into the whole thing, we're 7 to 15% negative.
Yes.
Whether it be developed, emerging, or the IFA. That would be Europe, Australia, and the Far East. So the market update, ladies and gentlemen, is not encouraging this particular week, but I will tell you overall the market is up. In fact, I just learned we've averaged well-diversified portfolios averaged about 7% the last 10 years.
Yes.
This whole European thing is nothing but a bunch of hype, ladies and gentlemen. It's nothing new. What do you think about this international thing, Deb?
I think the media has everyone scared, and they are just trying to panic. And honestly, if you look at history as it has repeated itself, you know, this has happened all the time. And you know what? Is the world broke?
Oh, my goodness.
If it's broke, we've always been broken, right?
No. You know that Europe has defaulted 73 times in the last 100 years. Not one time in entire world history has any country's national debt been paid off except ours for 2 years in 1848 under Andrew Jackson. Did you know that?
I didn't realize that was that far back. Jeez.
So in entire world history, ladies and gentlemen, we've never had a national debt paid off, with the exception of our country, for 2 years. Now, what does that tell you right there? I mean, that
tells us that's what makes the world go around.
Debt is bad. Not all debt is bad. Consumer debt is bad. I think the problem that we're having with a lot of these countries is people who've had their hand out are now coming back with nothing in it, and they're getting upset and they're rioting.
That's right.
That seems to be the big issue, you know, lack of responsibility.
And that's right. Individuals should take that on themselves.
Yeah, yeah. So,
and I know we've talked a little bit about this before, about individuals not taking the responsibilities that they need to on their own behalf.
Yeah, and we'll talk more about that. We got to go to a break right now. You're listening to Paul Nichols and Deb Seward with It's Your Money. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
How are you feeling right now about your personal finances? Are you confident you are going to be able to retire in comfort and financial security? Probably not, from what recent surveys are telling us. According to the Retirement Confidence Survey, only 18% of American workers are confident that they will be able to afford a comfortable retirement. Only 5% of those surveyed have said that they are focusing on their retirement needs. It doesn't have to be this way. You know you need to deal with your financial future, but you're stuck because you don't know exactly what you should be doing. That's where Financial Abundance comes in. Simply call Financial Abundance. They can help you just as they have helped hundreds of others just like you. You can stop worrying about your financial future because you don't have to know everything. If you have an investor coach teaching you the few right things, they are ready to help you and will do it for you quickly and painlessly. Just call 814-867-5745. You can also visit us at financialabundanceinc.com. That's 814-867-5745.
Welcome back to the show, boys and girls. You're listening to It's Your Money. I'm your host, Paul Nichols. I'm joined by Deb Seward. Hey, Deb.
Good morning.
We are pulling back the curtain on the financial services industry, as I normally do every Saturday morning, like clockwork, 9 to 10 a.m. Eastern. We are here to share some facts, some figures, some information. We're trying to muddle through the minefield of information that's out there. I don't believe there's an overload of clarity, but yet there's an overload of information. I think, Deb, would you agree? You've been in the business 30 years. People know they have access to a lot more information, but they know less than they did 30 years ago.
I do agree, especially during these downturns of the last 10 years. They've just been very dissatisfied with an information they've been given, I think, from their traditional brokers, and they're really reaching out for information so they can educate themselves, but they need someone to guide them and coach them up on it because they don't know what to look at first.
Which was the whole concept, genesis and evolution of It's Your Money, even the name implies. It's your money. You need to get educated and coached up. And I realize that there is a large group of people out there, I would say predominantly in my experience, they're of the female persuasion more than men, that this is the last thing they want to talk about.
I agree.
And I realize that that is the case with most people. In fact, I was sitting with the lady yesterday, and obviously she came in with her husband to talk about finances, and there's concerned about this, that, and the other thing. But she's having a hard time staying interested in the whole subject.
Yeah.
So we work hard to try to, I don't want to use the word dumb things down because that sounds almost disrespectful. But
how about layman's terms?
Yeah. We try to put things in layman's terms or stories or concepts that people can relate some of these more complex concepts to. So we are always working to pull back the curtain. And in fact, we just scheduled a bunch of classes, didn't we, Deb?
Yes.
For this coming year, we're going to be doing classes, retirement planning classes at South Hills Business School in the fall. We're doing them for Sun Area Technology Center. And we just got a new one. Penn State University has endorsed our course for, well, I shouldn't be so quick to say that. We're in the process of getting all the endorsement stuff squared away.
Hopefully we'll have that settled next week at the latest.
Yeah, and we will be running courses in Altoona. So for those of you in that neck of the woods heading more west, it's interesting. About half of, we have offices in Lewisburg, Deb, and offices in State College. Now, we're on NBC Channel 6, but people in Lewisburg don't see that.
Right.
Because they have a different affiliate. They also don't get the radio station,
mm-hmm.
which is interesting. So Altoona people get the radio station and the TV, but we've never done any courses there.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, it's exciting because with 99 opening, you know, I mean, 40 minutes to get to Altoona. I mean, that's nothing anymore.
Nothing.
I remember when it was before the 99 was done, you had to go through, was it Port Matilda?
Port Matilda, which was a bear.
Mm.
And then through that little part of Tyrone.
That narrows there. So anyway, let's not talk locally because we do have a national audience. But let's talk about some savings, Deb. I wanted to focus on that. I got into a conversation with some people earlier this week, and I had made the point that, if I'm not mistaken, I had seen the inflation numbers the last couple of years. What's your knowledge of those, Deb?
Well, I think inflation right now is low, and they expect it to stay low. They're looking at 2 and 3%, according to the government's figures at this point. However, as soon as those interest rates start rising, we know what inflation will do with that. It'll follow right along.
Now, am I mistaken? And I thought I had read inflation was actually zero the last couple of years.
I just read something this week. It said the government posted a 2%.
Okay. 2%. Okay. All right. Here's my question, ladies and gentlemen. Let's assume it's 2%. That's what they posted. Fine. We'll go with 2%. Okay. How many of your budgets have gone up more than 2% the last 2-3 years?
Mine has.
Mine's gone up 8%.
Wow.
My wife and I just figured our budget out last week, and it's up 8% in a time when we had 2% inflation. What's wrong? Where's the disconnect?
Yeah, where is that?
Most people are not aware that after the Carter years, remember when we had double-digit inflation?
Oh, yeah, that was bad.
I was a very young man then, just going into the military, and I remember I had a tough time getting a job. I couldn't find a job out of high school and ended up deciding to go in the military and college afterwards. But what's interesting was back then we had double-digit inflation, and I submit to you our inflation is much higher than 2% still. It's after the Carter years they took out energy and housing in the computation.
See, that's the problem.
For inflation.
You have to figure out what numbers are going into those figures that the government post for us.
So I submit to you, ladies and gentlemen, that most of your actual outgo, the dollars going out of your household to maintain your lifestyle, I'm going to submit to you it's probably more than 2%.
I would agree.
I submit to you it's probably 5 to 10% for most of us out there. So with that in mind, I've often argued with people. They'll say, oh, well, you know, we've got an average inflation of 3%. Ladies and gentlemen, that's not what I've seen.
No.
I see closer to the 7 or 8% inflation rates, to be honest
and
with you.
It depends on what categories you're looking in. Look at health care cost, nursing home cost, education cost. Those are well into the 8-10% range.
Well, let's look at the three areas that affect most of us most. That's profound, huh? Housing, energy, and health care.
That's right.
Those are the areas where it's all gone up.
Exactly.
Now people say, what do you mean it's gone up in housing? My house is worth less than what it was before. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I just came back from California. You shouldn't be whining. If you're here in Pennsylvania, yeah. I know I'm not. I'm a happy camper. I was in California, and people out there, 30, 40, 50%. I got a guy that was in one of my classes out there. Did I tell you the story about this guy?
You may have, but go ahead.
This guy was a very nice man. He's an architect, 67 years old, was at my class at the University of San Diego when we did those out there in May. The same courses we do here. They're endorsed by 200 universities around the country. But this gentleman, very, very nice fella, after the class, he had called and we had spent some time together. And he goes, you know, Paul, I bought a house 35 years ago. I'm an architect. I built it myself. 35 years ago, it cost me $100,000 for the land and the house. It's on the Pacific Ocean in San Diego, which is just gorgeous.
Yeah, okay? Beautiful.
Mitt Romney just bought the place next door.
Wow.
This guy, architect, hasn't worked in 2 years, can't work. His two rental properties are 50% of what they were before.
Oh.
This house is his passion, his love. He's raised his family. He doesn't want to leave the house, but he's going to be forced to sell it because he has no other option. You know what that house is worth today, just appraised 35 years later?
What?
$4 million.
Oh, that's too
This big. Isn't a wealthy guy. This is an average middle class guy like most Americans out there. I guess some of us might call him a little bit upper middle class. You know, he probably makes 70, 80 grand a year, 100 grand a year, which you got to have to live out there. And by the way, the cost of living in California, I didn't find it to be very much different than the cost of living here in Pennsylvania.
Well, probably different parts. I have a cousin in L.A. She says it's la high.
I'm telling you, the only thing I noticed was housing.
Mm.
In fact, fuel is more expensive here. Food's more expensive here. Did you know that?
Mm-mm.
Yeah, I mean, my wife and I were looking at it going, geez, the only thing I noticed that's major, that's a difference would be housing and taxes. Oh, my goodness, forget about real estate taxes. But anyway, all that is to set up what we want to talk about this in the next segment. And that's a few ideas that Deb and I have or read about or picked up here, there, and everywhere that might be a way to help adjust your budget so that maybe the non-inflation that you are feeling, may not feel as much, okay? So let's talk a little bit about some savings ideas, Deb. What are some areas we want to start in? Is there any area in particular? I know you've got, these are mainly Deb's notes. I'm going to work from here.
Well, I don't know how many of you really do an actual budget. I know I do. I know Paul does. But the best way to save is to know where you're spending it. If you detailed every expense on a monthly, weekly, whatever basis, you could seriously cut back or see where there's spending, unnecessarily wasting some monies that you could spend either somewhere else or stick it in a savings account, you know, or what have you.
Did I ever tell you the story about the millionaire that challenged me with that one time?
No.
I was 25, 26 years old, just starting in my business environment. Luckily, I was very, very motivated, and people saw something in me, and I was willing to work hard. And I remember counseling with this millionaire who was a friend of mine who was an orthodontist who was very successful and was kind of helping me with the marketing company and business that I was starting. And he said to me, he says, Paul, you're not a very good steward of your money. I said, what? I don't know anybody that's a better steward than me. I'm Mr. Stewart. I'm Mr. Stewardship.
And this was a millionaire.
This is a multimillionaire. His name was Nick. I said, Nick, what are you saying? He goes, Paul, I believe that you're not the steward that you might think you are, and I'm going to offer you a challenge to make the point. I said, what's the challenge? He goes, I want you to go the next 30 days, write down every penny you spend. If you smoke, write down smokes, coffee, pack of gum, a sandwich, every penny you spend the next 30 days. I came back, and I was shocked how much.
You don't realize where it
goes.
I
didn't realize it, yeah. And so I realized by just changing a couple minor things that I was able to save, I think, the first month just shy of $100.
Wow.
And I was making
just
peanuts.
Stuff.
Yeah. So thou shalt not fake thyself out. That's the 11th commandment. And I know the people. It's interesting, Deb. You know, I talk about it in my courses all the time. The people that come to the course and come in the office that think they can retire can't.
Yes.
The vast majority of the people that come into my office after the courses don't think they can retire and can. And if you think about the dynamic there, the person who thinks they can, no problem. They're probably not been the steward of money that they should have been.
Agreed, yeah.
And the guy and the gal who say, oh, no, we can't retire. Oh, no, let's not spend that. They've been so frugal and such good stewards that they've amassed more money and, of course, probably spend less. So it's interesting. A lot of it's, you know, the 6 inches between your 2 ears.
That's exactly
as
right.
I've noticed. What else would be a way to save besides tracking where your money goes, Deb? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there.
Oh, that's okay.
We can make a point.
I was just making a point with what you had said about the savings and keeping track was the same thing that I just mentioned. I mean, if you know where your budget is, budgeting is the key here.
Absolutely. You got to know where it is. Now, some items are hard to budget because they're like entertainment or whatever. Then stick a number on it for the month.
Just say I'm only going to spend this much to a restaurant or this much on whatever.
Would it shock you, Deb? I'm 46 years old and still get an allowance.
Yes, it would.
There's a reason I get an allowance. Now, it's a nice allowance. My wife gets an allowance. I get an allowance. The kids, we have earmarked so much for an allowance for that month. We don't give it to them, but it's for a haircut, a new pair of pants, whatever.
Yeah. Okay?
I don't know how you can develop a budget without having firm numbers earmarked for everything, and that means you're spending money, ladies and gentlemen. So you got to know where your money's going. Thou shalt not fake thyself out. If you do, shame on you. What else, Deb? What else can we help people save?
I think another way is you need to really look at your insurance overall, whether it's auto insurance, homeowners insurance, or your health insurance. I think it's a good thing to at least compare. You might maybe have a bigger deductible instead of a $250, maybe $1,000, but overall that really saves money.
It does. Now, here's a good example. If you've got a car that's just recently paid off, you may not need to have, which one is it, collision? There's one of them you don't need, property, whatever it is, but you can probably drop that altogether.
It is a collision.
Collision, okay, and then just have a higher deductible. I carry higher deductibles on all of our insurance for that very reason, you know.
It is cheaper.
We don't wreck our cars that often.
Right, that's just it. You know, mm-hmm. How many times do you really get into an accident? And if you're saving that money through, whether you pay it monthly, semi-annually, whatever, if you have a higher deductible, you're saving yourself some money, put it in the savings.
That's the key. I'm glad you brought that up, Deb. Once we find some dollars here with some of these suggestions and ideas, don't go blow the money. Take it and stick it in your savings account or stick it in a jar somewhere. Or like I do, I got one of those big 5 gallon,
glass jars.
Glass jars, yeah.
We have the same.
And every day I stick my
coin.
Change.
Mm-hmm.
But not only that, when I get my allowance, I stick a big chunk of that in there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so I don't know how, I bet you there's several hundred dollars in there. You know,
I've gone on vacation on mine before.
I've done Christmas holidays on my jar before for my whole family.
Yep.
So
yep.
Little things, folks, just little things. Okay, what else do we have, Deb? So we talked a little bit about keeping track of your money, shopping for maybe different deductibles on their insurance. They might pick up $200, $300, $400, $500. Or like the Geico commercial says, whatever they...
whatever their jingle is.
Butters and jam or whatever it is. Anyway.
Well, I think that with the credit card crunch right now, I think it's important that people realize is you can, if you have a good credit history and you haven't really missed payments, you can call those companies and say, look, I'm shopping around. What can you offer me? Can you lower my interest rate? And there's a lot of companies that will work with you if you have the right kind type of credit and have a good history and of making your payments.
I was talking to a friend of mine yesterday. I stopped by to see him. He's a mortgage guy. And he said, what's your mortgage rate right now? And I said, well, I think it's 5.25, 5.5. And I refinanced about a year ago. And he said, well, I can get you about 4.75 or something. I said, wow, that's pretty good. But we're not sure we're going to stay in our house for more than 2 years. So
it may not be worth
if
it.
If I knew I was going to stay for 2 years, I would do it.
Definitely.
Because the closing cost would be cheaper. So that's another thing you might look at. If you've not refinanced your home in the last 5 years, you might want to go look at it. I'll tell you that 1%, ladies and gentlemen, over 10, 20-year period is a massive number. It's much bigger than you can imagine that it is. Okay, we got about 2 or 3 minutes. What's another quick one, Deb?
Well, to tie in with I just said about credit cards, if you do not have a home equity line of credit, that's a good avenue to pay a lot less, the 4% rate, if you're, whether you refinance a mortgage, to consolidate some of those higher interest rate accounts.
And it's deductible.
Yes. And it's deductible.
Yeah, that's one of the biggest areas of transfers where people transfer wealth away from themselves to the institutions, banks, and government. Isn't that very area,
yep,
isn't it?
Absolutely.
So basically, we have a few ideas, auto, deductibles, credit card, negotiation. What was the one you just said? Interest, what was the one you just said?
Consolidate your debt.
Consolidate the debt with the home equity line of credit may be a good way. Keeping track of your money.
Talked about health plans and other insurance to redo.
Yes, and we have a whole plethora of items that we're going to take a quick break and come back. No, I guess we don't. We got plenty of time. What am I thinking? Jeez, I'm getting confused looking at our monitor.
You're going faster than we are.
I guess we're going back. Yeah, yeah. I'm ready for the holiday. I'm ready to put my party on which means a soda for me, by the way. I say put my party on. It used to mean go having a crack and a couple beers, but Paul don't do much of that these days.
That's because you have young kids, I think.
That's it too. You know, hey, you know, I don't enjoy drinking like I used to when I was younger.